Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Yeah. Mixed martial arts. M. Saw lots of fights.
M.
A.
A. Wow. Again, wow. No rehearsal.
No rehearsal.
How do we do that?
Wow.
Wow. Well, what an auspicious way to begin this post-fight show, this post-fights show, because we just wrapped up our second event of the night, Bellator 266, officially in the books. Phil Davis gets the victory over Yoel Romero, a terrific performance, in my opinion. And then a couple hours before that, Anthony Smith just destroyed Ryan Spann. And the man is timeless. He's such a gangster, that Anthony Smith. So I think this is a night of the theme of the main events was put some respect on these guys' names, because they are undervalued, they're underrated, and they don't get enough love, in my opinion. But we're going to talk all about these two cards for a little while with all of you guys. So I am Mike Heck, same crew as the pre-fight show. We got Alexander K. Lee joining us. I believe he just fired off a scintillating tweet. Is that accurate, AK?
AK, your mic. Turn your mic on.
Oh, the scintillating tweet is coming. My mic is also on now. We got fights. Listen, underappreciated fights, I think, and fighters. I guess that's as good a theme as we're gonna have for tonight. It was not the most eventful evening, but I mean, we got some decent fights, so can't complain, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if we can't complain, I guess that's a good thing. We also have E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos, just dropping that fiery intro track. How are you, my man?
You know, I'm kind of disappointed, Mr. Prince of Positivity. I had a great night watching fights. Mm-hmm. I thought it was two good cards. I mean, especially the main card for Bellator. I didn't watch the prelims because I was too busy watching the Ultimate Fighting. But, and even if I was, you know, it wasn't, you know, whatever. But, yeah, good night of fights. Excellent. And I think I'm just happy because I nailed all my picks. So,
yeah, I mean, that was really...
That's all we're really here for.
I did not. That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, it was a rough night picking the UFC. That's for sure. Let's just begin with Bellator. Let's begin with how it just ended, because it's fresh on our minds. We just saw it. Phil Davis wins a split decision over Yoel Romero. Jaron Vallel, my God, this guy should not be allowed to judge fights ever again. Mm. I mean, how dare you score that fight for
Yoel
Romero?
Is he the ref? He's a ref, right? He's ref.
He's a ref.
Yeah, I remember the name. Yeah.
He is also apparently one of the instructors at John McCarthy's command program.
Confidence.
And I see some people referring to him as his almost like sort of his protege, so someone who's worked very closely with Big John on, you know, scoring and how to teach scoring. So awkward,
terrible. Horrendous scorecard, and it seems like his name is always attached to the horrendous scorecards. I mean, I don't know what fight he was watching. I just don't know what fight he was watching. But be that as it may,
yeah.
Phil Davis wins again. I thought it was a fun fight. And I thought Phil Davis had a perfect third round, did what he needed to do. And I've never seen anybody do to Yoel Romero what Phil Davis did to Yoel Romero in that third round. So, Casey, you've been saying many times Phil Davis is the most I don't know if you said he is the most underrated fighter in MMA, but he's definitely at the top of your list. Did he answer a lot of questions? Is it time to stop labeling him as just the boring fighter? Because his last two fights have been pretty fun.
I think so. I don't know. Like I said before, I think fans have just such a bitter taste of maybe a couple of the bad fights versus Ryan Bader. And I'll probably name a couple other ones too. Yeah, he has had lackluster, entertaining fights. For sure. But in terms of just sport and just being a really good mixed martial artist, oh man, absolutely one of the most underrated fighters in the world. I have no issue. He absolutely is a top 10 on anyone's rankings. And if you want to call him borderline top 5 light heavyweight, sure, he's that good. And like they said, I don't know how many fights he's had in his career. I've never seen him honestly hurt or even come close to getting dropped or even nearly finished in a fight. So I'm blown away by Phil Davis, how good he is. And yeah, I get it. He's not the flashiest, most exciting. The freaking crowd was booing Phil Davis. Like, why do you boo Phil Davis? He's a nice guy. He's got Mr. Wonderful and you're booing him. But MMA fans, you know, they pay their ticket, whatever, do what you want. But yeah, Romero did. I'm sorry, Phil Davis did exactly what I thought he was going to do. I know you thought he was going to be kind of I think he kind of did both what we thought. I thought it would be a dominant decision win, kind of like what we saw in the first two rounds. And I think, Mike, you thought it would be kind of more of a grindy decision win, which is maybe what you could call the third round. But either way, just smart, intelligent fighting from Mr. Phil Davis. And it was exciting enough for me.
Agreed. AK, your thoughts on Phil Davis's victory and, you know, where he goes from here?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bad performance at all. I saw a lot. I think a lot of people were kind of preemptively dumping on this fight. I know when it was made, we were all kind of scratching our heads and we said this isn't going to be the big showcase for either guy. Certainly for Yoel, there was a lot of fears. He's a smaller fighter. He's dealing with a very high level light heavyweight in Phil Davis, who's like, you know, he wins his fight in a methodical manner, usually. Let's put it that way. But again, technical can be enjoyable. And I think we all thought that the second fight with Nemkov was great. The second Phil Davis and Nemkov fight was great. And I didn't think this fight was bad at all. I thought maybe it lived up to people's negative expectations, but it certainly picked up midway through. It was competitive in parts of the second round. And then I actually think it's like impressive how Phil Davis controlled the last round. I know top control and like constant takedowns can be kind of boring for some people, but when you consider who he was doing it to a guy with one of the best amateur wrestling backgrounds in MMA, even given the size difference, is impressive. And a guy who's known for being dangerous in the third round. Keep in mind, I'm a GSP fan, so watching someone like neutralize someone, I've always found interesting in its own way. It's not Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's not like, oh, it's not this like back and forth, like momentum swings that we like to see in fights. But I think Phil Davis is becoming really fascinating to watch. So I understand it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think a strong technical performance like that has to be appreciated. And I'm not going to lie, there were moments like where he kind of reminded me of – I'm going to say it's crazy now, but look, it's pretty late over here. It's GSP-esque in the way he controlled the first bit of the fight and then went to his wrestling and stuff to kind of seal it. I thought that was really impressive. So I enjoyed the fight. I did not think it was bad at all. And I'm a little surprised to see some people on social media and a lot of people saying like, well, that was as boring as we expected. I'm like, I thought it was a good fight.
You know, if it was the other way around, sorry, if it was Romero doing that, I swear people would say the same thing. It's just I feel like there's such a kind of bias toward Phil Davis. Mm-hmm. Actually, I had a friend over here watching it, and she was like, why are they booing Phil Davis? I was like, because they don't want him to win. They're there for Yoel Romero. I mean, if that was Conor McGregor holding down Nate Diaz, you know, or something like a fan favorite holding down someone, they would be, yeah, but you got there for some reason. Everyone loves Yoel Romero, and that's cool. But that's why I just take that. Was media or media members kind of poo pooing it, or is it more mostly just kind of fans?
I saw a few people in the media. I saw a few people in the media saying it wasn't a fight worth watching or something like that, or it was what they expected, but like in a negative way. And I'm like, I don't know if that's
the second round. The second round was really fun.
But who has done that to Romero? Who has done that to Romero? What fight are they talking about? We expected that. We haven't seen this before. Romero fought very Romero-esque fight, and Phil Davis won. Like
it's not a fight of the year. We're not saying it's a fight of the year, Ken, or anything.
There wasn't one tonight.
Yeah, but it was a really strong performance again from a guy that Casey's been saying has been overlooked almost for probably for too long. And I'd be happy to see him fight Nemkov again, not next, but sometime in the future. I'd love to see that a third fight between them. He's a really high level light heavyweight and really competitive. So I mean that should be celebrated. You know, not just he's not boring. I don't think Phil Davis is boring at all.
So here's pretty much like the example of all of this. So I tweeted out essentially like, put some respect on Phil Davis's name. That was a great performance. And someone replied to me, he just fought a 44-year-old fat middleweight who hasn't fought since he was 42, like totally discrediting Phil Davis. First of all, when has anyone ever called Yoel Romero fat? That is a man. Are you kidding me? Fat? Yoel Romero has never been used in the same sentence unless you drop PH in there describing what he wears, the wardrobe that he brings to the table. But
Wing-com's thick. I thought it was very thick forward. Two C's. That's about it, yeah.
Yeah, but that's great performance from Phil Davis.
That's classic like MMA negativity. Like, there's a problem with like instead of celebrating one person's performance, the instinct, like the first inclination, is to find a way to crap on both guys. And I'll never understand that. I mean, unless it's a truly terrible fight where you know both guys really just didn't put in their best effort, which I think we rarely see at the Bellator and UFC level. I'll never understand why we can't just give someone credit. Why does it have to be what was so great about this guy's win? It's always the emphasis on, well, what was so bad about that guy's loss? You know, why did that guy lose? And like, I don't understand the mentality. And it's like, if that's how you approach fights like this, I would say take a break from MMA if you can, and then come back. Maybe you're just burnt out. Maybe you've just seen too many fights. Yeah, I think Phil Davis's efforts to be celebrated. I didn't think Yoel Romero looked terrible. Again, I thought he ran into a really good opponent, a bigger opponent, younger opponent, really skilled opponent. He had his moments in the second round. He lost the fight. I don't think Romero's rushed. I think we've said it before. I think 185, if he can still make it look great, I say celebrate Phil Davis tonight.
Yep, and Davis again, like we talked about in the preview show. No matter what happened tonight, he's still going to be headlining cards every time he fights. There's options for him. We got if Corey Anderson loses to Ryan Bader, Phil Davis versus Corey Anderson is interesting. Even if Bader loses, you can run that one back. Hopefully it's a more exciting fight. So Davis is going to have some options. Romero, title hopes probably not really there, but he's got options as well. So there you go. Romero's debut is in the books. Phil Davis wins again. He's back in the win column. Let's talk about
real quick,
knockout artist. Oh, go ahead.
Before we have Shaheen's about to jump on, so give me a moment real quick. He's about to jump on, but I got to do some camera stuff. But before we go get off this main event, two questions. Coming into this, I was wondering, when is Romero going to be old? Was tonight's performance an old Romero? And did Bellator make a mistake booking this fight at all? I mean, from the get-go, I thought this fight from the get-go was a high-risk maneuver from the promotional standpoint. Jimmy, you saw the fans wanted Romero to win, so from a promotional standpoint you would think, you know, you set up Romero. And to me, this fight, when it was booked, I mean, there was such a low, in my opinion, there was a very low probability that Romero was going to beat Phil Davis tonight. So what do you guys think about those two questions?
I thought the matchmaking was a little questionable, especially if you're bringing in your Romero and, you know, throwing him in the Grand Prix, putting him in there with Rumble. Like, that's the fight everybody wanted to see. I think Bellator just kind of caved in to what everybody wanted and made that fight. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the matchup. Like, if you're a Romero fan, I think you were like excited to see him fight again because you haven't seen him fight since the Adesanya fight. But I think you're probably scratching your head like, this is not a great fight. And in terms of the old thing, I don't know. Like, I just, it's hard. He got such a late start. And I feel like we've seen the same guy for so many fights. Like I mentioned in the preview show, like this had Romero Weidman feelings to me, where Davis would win the first two rounds and then Romero would have to get a finish in the third. But I thought Davis would have a higher fight IQ, if you will. And that's exactly what he did. So the fight kind of played out the way that I thought it would. I thought it'd be a little more grindy. I didn't think Davis would stand as much as he did with Yoel, but good on him. So I don't know if I'm ready to call Romero like completely old. I just feel like he's the same guy. You know what I mean? What are your thoughts on that, AK?
Oh, why don't we hear from this gentleman?
Oh, let's hear from fellow bald brethren, Sean Alshadi, joining us. This is a delight. This is a welcome surprise. Sean, how are you, my friend? And your thoughts on Casey's two-part question there, if you heard it all.
I'm doing great, guys. Glad to join. Sorry for the delay. But yeah, Casey, I mean, I think that's a great question, both of them. And it's hard to say, right? Because in terms of old Yoel Romero, to me, this just felt like Yoel Romero, right? Like, I didn't feel like there was any difference tonight with how he fought Izzy, with how he's fought a lot of his UFC fights. This is what he does. He's a slow starter. It's very difficult for him to sort of get out of second gear until he gets into that third round, fourth round, fifth round. That's why the legend of third round Yoel Romero is so fierce, right? It's because it kind of takes him to this far to get into it. And you could feel it in that third round. He was starting to feel the urgency a little more. And I believe him when he says he didn't know that it was going to be five rounds. I mean, that he was fighting like someone who felt like he had three more rounds to go, two more rounds to go. In regards to the other question, though, you're 100% right, Casey. And I've sort of thought that from the start. I would agree with Mike here. The matchmaking on this just... I don't know what Bellator was thinking other than, like, I understand the idea of, like, let's – obviously people want to see Yoel. Let's rush him into some sort of fight, any fight. And Phil's a former UFC guy. He's been in Bellator for a lot longer than I think we even realize at this point. They were saying, like, 6 years on the broadcast, which feels crazy to me. But
okay, wow, okay.
Right? Like, how is that – we're all getting way too old. This is not cool. Over in the UFC, we have people competing who are born in the 2000s. Yeah. Like, I'm just not ready for whatever this feeling – old every Saturday is going to be.
Let's move on, Sean. Yeah.
Move on from that. But I digress, because you're right. Phil Davis is one of those guys who, like, he is perennially underrated to a extreme degree simply because he's boring, right? Like, people don't really want to tune in to watch Phil Davis because you kind of know what you're going to get. But the dude wins for the most part, the majority of his fights, and he wins them in kind of the same way. You really kind of knew what you were getting into when you book someone like Yoel, who's a slow starter, who can have these very unexciting fights until they are exciting all of a sudden. You book him against somebody like Phil, like, run that back 10 times. I think maybe one of them would be exciting, but the other nine are probably going to be pretty boring, pretty grindy, and like what we saw tonight. I don't know. If you're trying to introduce Yoel to your brand new audience, like, that's not the way, right? Like, you book him up against somebody, he's just going to smash. And then all of a sudden you can point to this crazy monster looking human being and just be like, look at what we got, rather than something like we got tonight. I think they absolutely dropped the ball when it comes to booking. And also, I will just add, it's time we probably start, like, respecting Phil Davis more just in general. Like, I think this is a broader conversation, but even among our own team, for the rankings that we have, the MMA Fighting Global rankings, like, there are a lot of people on that 8-man panel who just don't even have Phil Davis in their top 15 at light heavyweight, which is crazy to me. I have him up there, but, like, you look at his run since he's been in Bellator, his only real losses are to Nemkov and Ryan Bader, right? Like, other than that, dude is just out here winning. And again, it's just,
and two competitive losses too. They weren't like just I got blown out. Yeah, two competitive losses. So you got it. Yeah.
Two of those three were split decisions. Yeah. Like he is just generally in all of these fights, he's one of the best light heavyweights in the world. But again, we just discount him because he's boring, and that's sort of the way it goes. But I did not get what Bellator was doing with matching this up.
I'll tell you what, man. Romero threw a couple of those front kicks that were real close to changing the entire complexion of that entire fight. That guy is just such a ninja. He was very close to landing some of those push kicks. But AK, your thoughts on this?
Well, I will say the one thing, I don't know. I can't remember where I have Phil Davis ranked in my own rankings. I'm pretty sure I have him in there. I could be wrong. I might not have him in the top 15. Yes, and we kind of talked about this before in previewing this card. He's only lost to really great fighters. It just feels like he hasn't had a win over a great fighter in a while. I think, and again, this is subjective, right? Like, how do you view the wins over like a Liam McGeary, a Linton Vassell, compared to like guys that, you know, are fighting in the UFC, you know, kind of mixing up the UFC, like the Johnny Walkers and the Anthony Smiths and things like that. So, I mean, look, if just based on how you see him perform, you want to say Phil Davis is a top six, top seven light heavyweight, I don't blame you, but I also don't blame fans who might question like the strength of schedule. Like Romero, I think, is maybe like the biggest name. He had the win over Machida as well, but Romero maybe right now the biggest name he's beaten in a while. Even though it's a guy who's not a light heavyweight, he is a middleweight that's just returning to this division for the first time in friggin' forever. There is something you said about question, like his level of competition. But again, people who want to rank him higher, I don't blame them at all. These little do tend to be UFC-centric. I am guilty of that as well. But yeah, I do. I think we just need to see him either win the big one, as it were, you know, conquer that Nemkov or Bader mountain, or, you know, just keep racking up wins in Bellator against named guys. I do wonder how the perception will shift now that he's beaten Romero, because I know there's a lot of respect for Romero still, but he is a middleweight. People are suddenly saying like, oh, maybe he's old now. And again, and as that is relevant that people said, oh, was it a boring performance? Which I don't think it was, but you know, these are all things people can ammunition people can use against Phil Davis, unfortunately.
All I'm saying is in 2 weeks when we redo the next round of the rankings, y'all better have Phil Davis in the top 15 at light heavyweight, because this is ridiculous at this point that this man wasn't in there for many of you guys.
He's number nine.
Am I getting yelled at? Hold on. I'm going to check my rankings out. Am I getting yelled at? Like, is he not in my rankings?
I can't say. I don't know.
Off the top of my head, anybody.
In that case, sir, simmer down. Let me check.
I'm saying the royal we, right? Like the royal y'all, like in general, the 8-man panel better all have him in the top 15. That's all.
All I know is that the best 205er who fought tonight, his name is Phil Davis. That's all I'm saying. Well, actually, the second best. The best one was called Big Tuna.
So I was going to say, there's some Big Tuna disrespect going on right now. I'm not here for
it. If Big Tuna is not in your top 15,
just throw Tuna in there with you well next. Give Tuna that fight.
Yes. Thank you. That's all. Big Tuna, Yoel.
I had Phil Davis at 10. I feel Davis a 10th. I don't want nobody yelling at me. I feel Davis number 10. All right, in my rankings. So,
one last point on this, because I don't know if we're going to get to it. But so I had people look this up for me on Twitter. If you had parlayed Neiman Gracie round one KO with Big Tuna round one KO and bet $100 on it.
Wait, let me
just
guess.
$100. How much do you think that would have paid? Like, if you haven't seen it already.
$100. It's got to pay at least 10 grand. I don't know.
Any other guesses?
I already saw it, so I can't guess.
What is it?
It's way higher than 10 grand.
$77,000 and $800. So almost 78K for a $100 bet on those two men. Wow. 78K.
I hope someone did that.
The disrespect.
Absolutely zero people did that.
Zero.
If somebody did that, we will invite them on the next preview show, because that is impressive. I want to see the ticket. I want to see it all. But that is some impressive gambling if you parlayed both of those for first round KOs. Let's talk real quick before we go to the UFC. I mean, Big Tune is awesome. I think we can wax poetically. just go to our Twitter page at MMA Fighting and just look at the 3.5-minute clip of Big Tuna, and you'll know everything you need to know. What a win. Huge upset win. But let's talk about the knockout artist, Neiman Gracie, Sean Alshadi. What did you think of that? Because if we could have guessed any, you know, 5-10 ways that fight could have ended, first round knockout, I don't think any of us could have seen that coming, especially against a guy who's got a pretty good striking background in Mark Leminger. That was impressive, was it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a guy who was coming in here, I think he was undefeated, right? Like, he was making he was kind of new to Bellator, but he was coming in with a pretty good pedigree. And of all the outcomes that you could have asked for, I don't think anybody would have called that one. Neiman Gracie, man, he's been quietly doing it now for a while in Bellator. He's starting to become something really interesting, right? Like, you saw it tonight. What they have him doing over there, his coach's name escapes me at the moment. Somebody give it to me.
Neiman Gracie? His coaches?
Yeah.
Rafael Cordero.
Cordero, yeah, that's right. What they have him doing out there with Cordero, man, like, he looked good tonight. Like that uppercut, that finishing combo looked like someone who actually knew how to strike, right? Like that wasn't some lucky, you know, shot that he was landing. He was mixing it up pretty well in there. And you combine that with what we already know about him, with the ground game, the just a savant on the mat like that. He's kind of turned it into something really surprising that I think none of us quite expected. It was really interesting to see. And it's always cool. I've said this before, but it's always cool when you can sort of see these guys, these younger guys coming up, and then sort of that switch flip in real time on them, where they kind of like figure out other aspects of the game that you know they've been working on. I think we just did that tonight and saw that from Neiman Gracie.
AK, he called out two guys after this victory. He called out MVP, who's getting ready to fight Douglas Lima very soon. And then he also called out Jason Jackson. He wants that rematch. He felt like he got hosed, and I think other people would agree with him on that. But in my opinion, he's probably going to get the title shot against Yaroslav Amosov, because that just seems to be the direction they're going right now. So if you're the Bellator matchmakers, how do you book Neiman Gracie moving forward? Does he wait for one of those two guys at this point, or do you just try to keep this guy at the center and just keep throwing him out there and trying to knock dudes out?
We got to find a power matchup now for K1 Neiman, right? It's funny. Neiman is like, he's such a, the Gracies, you know, ever since, of course, like, you know, the glory days of Hoist and some of the other guys, they've had checkered results in MMA and actual MMA, if we're being generous. So it's funny. He's always like, he's been cut from a different cloth kind of ever since he burst onto the Bellator scene. Both even personality wise, he stands out from the family, and I think that's great. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see him fight MVP. I just think that Bellator is not going to go in that direction. I mean, people can bring up all they want the whole, you know, MVP's kind of had some favorable matchmaking. Some of it, you know, is out of their hands. He's had some opponents fall out, but I do think this is one matchup they would want to avoid. At least as far as what's next for Neiman Gracie, maybe sometime next year they could cross paths depending how the results of their next fights go. But I don't know if that's the next one they make. I think you're right, Mike. I think they maybe just push him into that title shot with Amosov. I think it's a good stylistic matchup, at least as far as being theoretically two guys, you know, who will give you some entertaining stuff on the ground. But I also think they're both, again, Amosov is really well-rounded. I think Neiman showed that he's a little more well-rounded than the people expected. So yeah, I think it's a sellable fight. Does Amosov not have a title defense already scheduled?
No, I think they'll throw him in there with Jason Jackson. That kind of seems like the direction they're going after that card.
And that's not official yet.
That's not official yet, no.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, right. Yes. Okay. So I would say Neiman should wait. Yeah, I'm on the Neiman Gracie wait to see what happens there, Train.
Casey, your thoughts on the co-main event?
I was just kind of shocked. That's all. I was like, that was like, I like everything Shane said. That wasn't striking from a grappler. That was striking from a very good striker. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like Liminger was like waiting for a takedown and he came in over top or anything like that. It was just straight up good striking, good elbow, good uppercut, perfect timing. You know, that's all. I was just like, whoa, Neiman Gracie is much better. He is improving. And it's pretty cool watching fighters improve with such a big spotlight on him. So good job, Mr. Gracie. That's all. Yeah, he is a force to be reckoned with. I'm not sure how good he is in the worldwide kind of welterweight rankings, but without a doubt, right now in Bellator, he's a tough out for everyone at the top. I want to see him fight. I want to see him fight more. I want to see him fight Jackson again. I want to see him fight Amosov. Did he fight Lima? I forget. Lima?
No, he hasn't fought Lima yet.
He hasn't fought Lima yet. Okay. Oh yeah, he fought for the title against Rory. That's what it was. I know he fought for the title,
which was a surprisingly competitive fight.
I thought it was very competitive. Yeah.
He healed John Fitch right afterwards.
You know? Yeah. So Neiman Gracie is awesome, and can't wait to see him back.
Yeah, like again, the loser of the Lima MVP fight seems like the right way to go. Two big names. That's the way to go, because you feel like if MVP beats Lima, his next fight's going to be for the belt against whoever it is. So good win for Gracie. Nice win for Deanna Bennett.
Oh, great.
Kind of sucks she missed weight, but she looked really good in the fight. Saul Rogers, workmanlike decision over a really tough guy in Georgi Karkanian. And Big Tuna kicking off the main card in a big way. The big upset over Christian Edwards. That was not supposed to happen, but it did. There are a lot of upsets on this card.
I was going to say, I thought like Mirtaz Aliyev losing to Anthony Adams would be like the biggest upset of the night before the Christian Edwards loss happened. I was like, because that Mirtaz Aliyev, I think it was like almost a 5-1 favorite. And Adams won a decision. I was like, oh crap. Like, well, I was like, there's your big Bellator upset of the night. And then Big Tuna came out and just smashed everything.
Go for it, Casey.
I was just saying, Bellator 266, the main card at least, had no business being this entertaining. I was just like, all right, I'll just watch the main event, everything, whatever. Let me see Lars walk out. That's cool. But I was like, I had actually a really enjoyable time watching the main. And I was kind of shocked after watching all the UFC fights and Bellator came. I think it was because it was different. The crowd felt. I thought even though obviously it wasn't like a sold out arena or anything, but the crowd that was there, I felt really added a lot. And it was just. Hearing like from the 6 fans at the UFC Apex to like, you know, or whatever crowd in San Jose, it was just a nice night for Bellator. I was surprised they overachieved tonight a bit.
One more thing on the upsets. You guys were mentioning the upsets. I don't know what it is with Bellator, but it feels like if you looked back on the last 5 years of like upsets that were like +1,000 type of underdogs or more, I feel like 2 out of every 3 of them had to be in Bellator. Uh-huh. Like it's something about the Bellator cage and the promotion and maybe because they do a lot of showcase fights. Mm-hmm. So that kind of sets up maybe those stakes. But like most of the big, like high level maximum like odds type of upsets in recent history seem to happen in Bellator. It's pretty crazy, man.
It's the way they build their fighters and the way they match make. It's expected for these to be showcase fights, but if you look at the top, I think if you look at the top 20 biggest upsets in like MMA history, I don't know how updated those are these days, but if you look at it, I think like more than half the list are Bellator fights, because you have stuff like Kimbo Slice Jr. being like a -800 favorite in like his 4th pro fight, and it's like, what? It's like, why?
Yeah, it's why? These fighters where we just don't have a lot of information on them, right? Like, it's kind of like everyone, both people involved are very new. Like, I remember being in the arena when Bubba Jenkins lost to, I can't even remember, guy that he lost to. LaRue Burley, that's right. That was in Arizona.
Talking LaRue Burley tonight, who knew?
Great memory on that. Mike, but yeah, it's just in Bellator, it seems to be a very consistent thing. But again, I think that just goes to the matchmaking philosophy.
Yeah, because I think they have these long running
in Bellator history too.
Yeah, these big prospects, and a lot of times they'll bring in these regional guys you just never heard of. Basically, not saying they're not good, you just haven't heard of them. So when they do win, the betting lines, obviously competitive wise, it was probably always closer. But betting line wise, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And obviously, like 99% of those showcase fights go the way that everyone expects. It's just the 1% that we
remember. But you know what? But then you get these magical moments like Big Freaking Tuna. That's all. You just get magical moments like Big Tuna. And now we're going to see Romero versus Big Tuna. I booked it already.
Big Tuna out here just dropping Space Coast, coast to coast references in his post fight. I love it.
That guy is just a treat. So great win for him.
And one more thing about Big Tuna. Just, I applaud any man that's willing to. He's basically. Okay.
Where's this about to go?
He's a man that probably just swim with a shirt on type of guy. And so like, the fact that he would get half naked in front of a giant arena and just throw down with like these chiseled beasts across the cage from them. I just like mad respect for these gentlemen. Mad respect. I saw the promo photos that Bellator sent out. I was like, oh boy, you know, but.
The first thing that guy did after his win was he rushed to Twitter and called everyone busters. Yeah. Like, that's fantastic. Like, that is a way, we had said this in our MMA fighting Slack, but that is a way underutilized insult. And I'm here for calling people busters after you do something like that. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, biggest stock rise of the day. Yeah. No doubt about it. It was Big Tuna. No doubt. So that was Bellator. Fun card.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury. not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
UFC went down a little bit earlier. Anthony Smith closed the show with a first-round submission win over Ryan Spann. This was one-way traffic from start to finish. Anthony Smith looked tremendous. And we didn't get to really hear the first half of his post-fight interview with Michael Bisping, but he was fired up. He called out Alexander Rakic. Seems like Rakic is in for that. And I think we got a fight brewing for maybe December, probably in a main event of a fight night card. So, Sean, we'll begin with you. Anthony Smith, this guy, as we talked about on our preview show, he's experienced the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, not just in the UFC, but all around the country, around the world. This guy's been doing the damn thing for a long time. To see this guy, you know, in some tough spots, a couple bad losses, come back and win three in a row the way that he has. What are your thoughts on Lionheart, what he's been doing, and what he did tonight to Ryan Spann?
Man, I mean, first of all, just what a unique cat he is, right? Like, what a unique character he is for MMA. His, I think, Casey, maybe you said something about this tonight, of just how unique his road has been and sort of everything that he's gone through and the honesty that he sort of brings to all of it, right? Like, he always feels like very genuine when he's speaking. I absolutely adore what he has been able to do over the last year. Like, they keep throwing him these tough up-and-comers, and he's not complaining, and he just keeps beating them back with a ferocity and with an ease that is just consistently impressive. Like, tonight was absolutely fantastic. And at this point, he has now 5 first-round finishes since 2018, has tied with Vicente Luque for the most in the UFC during that stretch, and he just quietly goes about his business and does this sort of thing, man. Like, they were talking about today on the broadcast about him growing into the light heavyweight division and like the actual size that he's been gaining and things like that. And you can really tell, like, it was showing tonight, like what he has done over the past year and change since he lost that really terrible fight against Rakic. Coming back against all these young up-and-comers, building his body up to this division, just taking on these challenges and doing it in a workmanlike fashion, but also just on the side, really still improving. Like, we call him such a veteran, right? 52 fights or something like that, but he still gets better. Every time we see him out there, he's tough as all nails. And I just love the chip that he's carrying on his shoulder right now, like the saltiness. And we saw it come out right after he won, because he's absolutely right. He still doesn't get that respect, for whatever reason it is. And I wonder if a large part of it is just the record of, you see a guy with 16 losses, you kind of assume he's probably not, you know, one of the best in the world, but it's just that record is so deceiving, because so many of those losses were so much earlier in his career. He was a different person back then. He deserves so much more respect than he gets in this light heavyweight division. He genuinely at this point is probably like one win away from really fighting for that title against whoever, you know, comes out of that mix. I absolutely love it. And I love that he booked his next fight in the cage, basically, with that rematch against Rakic. I thought it was a 10 out of 10 night for Anthony Smith.
I would agree. And AK, what's funny about Anthony Smith is people look at the Rakic fight, and I feel like that was the big downfall. Like, that was the one where you have to look in the mirror and readjust. And a lot of people look at the Glover Teixeira fight, but a lot of people forget that in the first like 8 minutes of that fight against Glover, people are saying like, this is the best Anthony Smith we've ever seen. Like, the way he was throwing volume and moving around, showing a lot of quickness, he just kind of burnt himself out. And then Glover took over. And then we remember what happened after the fact. The fight should have been stopped. Should it have not been stopped? Who's to blame? The referee or the coaches, yada, yada, yada. But this man just looked himself in the mirror, got back after it. And now look at him. 3 wins in a row. He's got a big fight with Rakic. If he wins that, like Sean said, he's in a very good position, especially now that John Jones is no longer in the light heavyweight division. could this guy be fighting for a title in the next year? Is this possible? Could we be seeing Anthony Smith fight for a light heavyweight title by this time in 2022?
Yep. What's not to like? He's a company man. He does broadcasting for the UFC. He finishes fights. They trust him as a main eventer. He's main evented how many fight? I think, like, unless he's on pay-per-view, he's main evented like 7 fight nights in a row or something. 5 or like 6. I can't count. 7. He's main evented like 7 fight nights in a row. Oh, plus and UFC 235. He did. He main evented against John Jones. So he's also main evented pay-per-view. He's a very well-liked, trusted name in the promotion. He's very professional. He's great on the mic when he's not swearing. I mean, I don't know if you guys had it bleeped out on ESPN Plus, but up here in Canada, his words were a little too sensitive for our censors, and we heard almost nothing in his book. But he was worked up. He was obviously very emotional after that fight. And that's another thing people like. So he wears his heart in his sleeve. You guys said he's honest. We feel like we know who Anthony Smith is, and that's a big. I think that's a big thing for the UFC and for ESPN when they're trying to market somebody. So, yeah, especially with John Jones out of the picture, as mentioned, there's no reason he can't be one impressive performance away from a title fight. It kind of goes with the grander discussion we were having before of like when guys lose fights, like his losses to Rakic, his loss to Teixeira, we focus on the negatives. We focused on, oh man, he was, like you said, the last 3 rounds of the fight with Teixeira, not the first 2 rounds. And it's like losing to Glover Teixeira, being outclassed by Glover Teixeira is not a shame. Glover Teixeira is an elite light heavyweight. I'd say maybe one of the 10 best light heavyweights of all time. There's no shame in that. Rakic is an up and comer. He's on his way to a title shot as well. And John Jones is John Jones. So losing to these guys does not make you a bad fighter. There's certainly holes that you see exposed and reasons to think this guy, you know, has to fix some things up. But he's clearly still good enough to beat a certain tier of competition. And not just beat them, but outclass them. This is 3 first-round finishes now, including the Jimmy Crute injury. So, yeah, it's not unreasonable at all that he'd be fighting for a title. Is it the UFC's number one choice? Is the number one choice for a lot of fans out there? Maybe not. But, again, the way this guy fights, the way he finishes people, he's kind of taking that choice out of other people's hands and he's put it back in his own hands. And that's what's so great about him, right?
Real quick, one other thing too I want to add just to follow up on that is, dude, I think what I find most impressive about his whole story at this point in particular is just like you look back maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, right? When he first started, Anthony Smith really first started coming up in the ether and we started being aware of who he was and hearing his name and anticipating his fights. And he was winning those fights, but he was winning those fights in such a different fashion than he's winning now, right? Like you go back to the Andrew Sanchez, the Hector Lombard, like all of these fights where he's getting his ass kicked for basically the entirety of it. And then his heart really pulls him through in you know, the final minutes and he pulls off some late comeback or something like that. That's not how he's winning anymore. Like you look at these last 3, all 3 of them first round finishes and all 3 of them just thorough in their domination. And even like you said, AK, the first couple rounds of that Glover Teixeira fight, which is also very thorough in Anthony's favor. Like he has really become a complete fighter under our noses. And it's so much fun to watch compared to where he was just even 3-4 years ago.
Casey, your thoughts on the main event and one thing that kind of drives you a little crazy, and I'm glad Anthony Smith gets the main events and the money and stuff, but Return of the Mac just hits so much harder when there's 15,000 people in the arena. Does it not, Casey? I mean, good Lord. Like when he came out for the Jimmy Crute fight, I mean, it woke me up. I was ready to go. I was like, yes, fans, this is awesome. This is tremendous. To hear it come out in the Apex, it's just not the same when 18 people are clapping for you. Like it's just not the same.
Yeah. I kind of miss it's either do no fans or I'm kind of in agreement with Dana on this, either no fans or kind of, or at least half capacity or something. When there's like 15 people there, just weird. That's all. But, what's the question? Just about Anthony Smith. Quick story about Anthony Smith. When he came back to the UFC, after originally getting cut from the UFC, people forget that he was in the UFC and got cut. Remember, he kind of came over from the Strikeforce transfer.
He was in the UFC for one fight.
He lost by knee bar in the first round. Yeah. And I remember watching that. I remember him losing to Roger Gracie on the very final Strikeforce card. And then, you know, I was surprised he came over and he lost his first fight in UFC. UFC released him. And then he loses his first fight in the regional circuit, too. So for 99% of professional fighters, you're done. Like, yeah, you might fight regionally for a while. But, like, as far as getting to the, you know, the big show, you know, the UFC or any big promotion, you're pretty much done, I would say. But somehow he worked his way back. And when he came back, I remember he beat
Did he actually lose his first fight back when in his first return?
No, he won.
Okay, he won. Then he lost his second fight to Cesar Ferrer. But I remember when he beat Andrew Sanchez. It was a great comeback fight. It was still when he was at 185. And I talked to him off camera, and I told him, like, I got to tell you something, man. Like, I thought you were done. I just thought you were done. Like, I'm just so impressed. Because I remember the interview, I was just really impressed by what he was saying. You know, we've all heard him. I don't know if you talk about how his honesty just comes out. But I talked to him, and then he looked at me. He said, and I told him, he's like, dude, it's so impressive, man. Just keep it up. And he looked at me. He goes, dude. And he said this, and I know it sounds bad, but he says, I'm just too dumb to give up. That's all. I'm just too dumb, you know? And like, but he says it in a very straight, kind of non-
very, yeah, in like, you know, a very meaningful and thoughtful way.
And I understood what he meant. And like, I love the Anthony Smith story. I'm so happy for that guy. I don't know him. I just watch his interviews. We've interviewed him a couple of times, whatever. So, yeah, I love the Anthony Smith story. And if he gets a couple more wins, the problem is, like, I want to believe in him more. I just don't think he's, like, a top five light heavyweight. But, man, he's so good. And I just love his story. I'm happy. I'm happy he's happy making the money. He's happy. I'm happy he's happy doing his TV stuff. And it's just he's a feel-good story. And I hope you saw the tweet. I just hope fans appreciate him. That's all. He's a unique character, and I love it.
And he's that genuine in real life. Yeah, like every time I've ever talked to him, I come away from it just being so impressed with him, just as a human. It's pretty wild, man.
And he gets it too. So I remember when he fought Rashad before the fight. He was talking, I'm gonna beat Rashad, but as soon as I beat him, everyone's gonna say you beat up an old guy. You beat up an old guy. And sure enough, people said that. And he said, but I'm ready for that, you know. And I'll beat Rashad, and then I'll move on to the next one. Like he sees
incredibly self aware. He's super self
aware. It's just like, he's a good dude.
The only time I've ever heard him like cut a heel promo, this wasn't a heel promo, but just a really angry promo, was the first time I interviewed him. It was right after he beat Leonardo Gomeras in his first fight back with the UFC. And we talked about his whole story, and it was just blown away. And he told me the story. I was like, well, who do you want to fight? Like, if there's anybody in this division you want to fight, like, who is it? He wanted to fight Derek Brunson so bad. He had like a run-in with Derek Brunson in an elevator, and like Brunson shunned him. Like Anthony Smith said, hey, what's up, Derek? And Derek just like kind of giggled at him. And Anthony Smith just like unloaded on him. And from that point forward, I was like, I have to see Anthony Smith fight Derek Brunson. And then he moved up to 205. We never got to see it, but that was classic. That was probably like 5 or 6 years ago when I had that conversation.
When Anthony Smith was on the post show with Karen Bryant and Tyron Woodley and Jovan, he said something, you know, everyone was against me, you know, they didn't believe in me. And Tyron Woodley was like, well, we all thought you were going to kind of win tonight. But then Tyron Woodley goes, you know what? But I get it. You need that chip on your shoulder. That's what motivates you. And usually I'm kind of like, fighters as analysts, I think sometimes it's overblown. But like, I really enjoy Tyron Woodley just looking at it and goes, oh, I understand what you're saying. Because like all of us, I mean, he was a favorite. I picked Anthony Smith to win, but he still needs that. You know, that chip, they're like, they don't believe in me. They think I suck, you know? And I love it. I just love it.
I'll just say, Anthony Smith was like the first big interview I did when I joined the MMA fighting team. This has been 4 years ago now, after the Sanchez win, ahead of the Hector Lombard fight. And I remember, again, this is, I mean, I'm still nobody, but when I was really nobody back then. And, oh,
okay. Wow.
You're somebody in our hearts, AK.
I was just starting off MMA fighting. And Anthony Smith at the same time was just starting to, this is before the light heavyweight move. So it was kind of just starting to still get his footing in his second run with the UFC. But I remember interviewing him and thinking like, man, if this guy like gets some wins and strings some wins together, he really could be a star. And I mean, don't get me wrong, we have some bias when we, you know, interview anybody. We kind of like, you know, there's a bit of a rooting for them. But there was definitely something special about him. And I was really surprised that like, this is a guy who was such a veteran. I'm like, he should be a journeyman, but there was a spark there. And I'm like, man, if he actually gets some wins together and gets a run going, this is a guy who's going to be a name. I never thought he'd compete for a title. That was completely surprising, but I think anyone who has interviewed him feels the same way, that it's like, wow, he's different. Like this guy is different. And you know, one of those special athletes in MMA. I'll go ahead and say it.
And just remember, Anthony, there's only one person here who picked Ryan Spann And that is Alexander Kaitley.
All right, listen. Who remembers these things? Who remembers these things? Why would you bring that up? I was 0 for on all the big fights. I picked Romero. I picked Ryan Spann. And I picked Devin Clark.
Do you watch MMA?
This is the man who does our predictions for the website.
I'm the only one who is like on record publicly with the picks who has to take this from the people all the time. And they only remember when you're wrong, guys.
Yeah, they do.
They only remember when you're wrong. They don't give you credit when you're right. And then you just got to show up every time. Casey, can you just shut my camera off? Just turn the camera off.
What's happening right now? AK's like melting down.
We're losing AK meltdown.
Okay. I've been emotional. Right, Deanna Bennett got me.
Yes. Ugly cry.
Yeah.
All right. So real quick, we'll take a couple questions, but good win for Smith. Iwan Kutalaba, good win. Ariane Lipski needed that one really badly. Armand Sarukian, good Lord, what a performance.
Oh my goodness.
No case fight. I love it.
Lived up to that, to being the biggest favorite on the card. He needed a finish. He needed a performance like that. He got it. Nate Maness with an incredible comeback win. Jeez. And then Joaquin Buckley with another incredible comeback win, because I thought he was losing that entire fight until he got the knockout. So, Sean, let's begin with you, because this is one of those cards where it was very top heavy. There were a lot of competitive fights. There were a couple of names that we're very interested in. If you had to choose, like, a sixth player award, like, you're an NBA fan, a sixth player award for this card, like the under the radar star of UFC Vegas 37, who would you pick and why?
Under the radar, that's a good question. I mean, ultimately, it might be one guy you just mentioned, which is Armand Sarukian. I think I'm probably butchering the last name right, but my God, man, like, that dude is gonna be a problem in this UFC lightweight division for years to come. Like, I am absolutely full on believer at this point. We even saw it with his debut against Islam Makhachev, where he kind of like gave Islam a surprisingly like competitive fight. And it's like, that should have been the first sign to a lot of people, like what this guy could actually be. But he has just looked like a monster since. And really, the whole problem so far with his UFC career is he just hasn't been finishing people, right? And then come in today in what was kind of a showcase fight, like you mentioned the odds. I love it when the UFC does this. They don't do it nearly enough in my mind. They don't let these kind of prospects get these kind of showcase fights, because that's what we get when you do that. When you make that booking, you get him looking outrageously good, knocking this guy out in less than 2.5 minutes. And now who isn't excited to see Armand Sarukian really work his way up the ranks, right? Like, he is absolutely my star of this card in terms of underrated fighters coming in. And I cannot wait to see where he is, where he sort of lands next in this lightweight division, because this division is stacked. It's always one of the most talent rich divisions in the entire sport. But right now, when you got hungry young killers like him coming up, oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, him and Topuria are two guys who could fight for titles. Topuria is obviously at featherweight, but those are two guys who you got to keep an eye on. So, AK, who is yours? Who is your sixth player award for UFC Vegas 37?
I don't know if she. I mean, it does, I will definitely say she was flying under the radar, because it feels like her fight now was actually. I was just say feels like her fight probably was like what, 6 or 7 hours ago now. Yeah. Aaron Blanchfield, one of the biggest betting favorites though. So it's not like people don't know about her, but she's what, 22 years old. She's amazingly accomplished already. She won some fights in Invicta. She lost a very close fight to Tracy Cortez, which a lot of people thought she should have won. So she should be undefeated. She almost could have won an Invicta title. She had a fight for a vacant title against Pearl Gonzalez. Unfortunately, Pearl got COVID-19, so that fight was just canceled. And then Aaron Blanchfield got the call up anyway. So she never got that chance to fight for an Invicta title. It did feel like she would have been favored in the Pearl Gonzalez fight and have had a good chance to win. But an amazing grappler. She's a black belt at age 22. She had a star-making performance at one of those EBIs, one of those Eddie Bravo Invitationals. I got everybody talking about her. And then a huge head kick of Victoria Leonardo. She's hit like all these, you know, we always talk about when someone's coming up as a star, it's like you got to hit all these check marks. So it's like, okay, she had this big grappling tournament, she won it. Can't she get a highlight finish? She got a highlight finish in Invicta, you know, for a major promotion. And then, okay, what about her UFC debut? You know, she's got all this hype behind her. Complete domination. She didn't get the finish. But again, I think Sarah Alpar is tougher than people are gonna realize, or than her 0-2 record says. She's just got herself some really tough fights for her first two UFC fights. And also, again, Blanchfield is the real deal. I mean, this is someone who will be a world title contender. I'll be shocked if she doesn't compete for a UFC title sometime in the next 2 years. Hopefully they can do a slow burn, and we're not even talking about that until like 2023. But Aaron Blanchfield lived up to the hype big time. So anyone who may not have caught the first few fights of the early prelims, I would definitely recommend, please go check out the Blanchard Alpar fight if you want to see someone who's really young and really lived up to the hype. Great performance.
Dude, she threw like 300 strikes, landed like 200 of them, and then after the fight was over, she got up and leisurely walked to the physician, was like, I'm cool.
Didn't even take a deep breath. Her nickname is Cold Blooded, and she's like so level all the time. Like in interviews, like again, post fight interviews, she rarely. It's almost scary. It's a little scary. It's almost like the guy in that free solo. I think she might have that same. Honestly, she might have that same condition he has, because she just never. She just rarely like shows that kind of extreme emotion. It's really scary.
I feel like AK took yours, Casey. But do you gotta?
I can add more to Erin Blanchfield. She's just first of all, I'm excited that she's a flyweight. Are we kind of the problem? Shevchenko is just so ahead of everyone else right now at flyweight. I think people kind of fans, maybe media too. I think the UFC in general kind of crap on the flyweight division. Like Shevchenko never gets a main event for pay per view because there's no.
There's no compelling challenger.
There's no compelling. But they're coming. They're coming. That's on. Erin Blanchfield is one of them. Erin Blanchfield is one of those. I don't know who her big inspiration was, but I feel like she was kind of that. Those new Ronda Rousey movements. So they saw Ronda fight when she was like 9 or 12 or something. I know, and she went to the gym, and she is just one of those women. Like I think Kay Hansen's one of those too. I think she's better than Kay Hansen, but just one of those. They were just. This is what they've wanted to do ever since they were like a young teenager. 22. She looked amazing tonight. I was just blown away. I knew how good Zarukian was, and that was the showcase fight. So, I mean, that was awesome. But excited for Erin Blanchfield, and can't wait. She's actually what the UFC was trying to say who Macy Barber was. I think is Erin Blanchfield. Macy Barber was kind of this one built up as like this. You know, she's gonna be the Jon Jones. I don't know. I'm not calling Erin Blanchfield John Jones of the flyweight division, but I think she's more on that route than the UFC is hyping her. No, the UFC isn't giving her that same kind of hype, and I think she deserves it rather.
Yeah, maybe after today. I don't know. We'll see.
There's a few 25ers right now that are making. Manon Fiorro, she's a little bit older, but Casey O'Neill is 23, about to turn 24, and I get Erin Blanchfield, so the future's bright at 125. I'm going with Raquel Pennington for mine, not just because of the performance. Oh, sure. That whole fight flew under the radar, but then just hearing the stories of her getting COVID and being on a freaking respirator, like things I had no idea about that she was battling. And then to come back and, you know, have that grimy performance against Pani Khanzad, who has been on a nice run. That was an impressive performance. And then hearing sort of the backstory about how she got to that fight. And I feel like that fight was flying under the radar anyways, but to see Raquel go in there and perform the way that she did, super impressed with her. So she would be my sixth player award winner. So there you go. We got some compelling questions. We'll take a few before we
we try to, because it's so late.
I will just point out one comment that I saw from a Mr. Ed MSK who said, AK, you make picks that bad again and you're being relegated to one letter.
Don't acknowledge this person. I'm kidding. I love all the commenters.
You can choose whether it's an A or an AK, but that's what's at stake now.
How likely is Sarukian's next fight against the winner of Dan Hooker versus Nasrat Haqparast, or will he face another unranked opponent? Now, AK, you and I are going to have this discussion on to the next one tomorrow, and I have a pick for this, and I'm going to save that for then. But Sean, what do you think? Do you think Sarukian will get the winner of that fight? And by the way, we don't even know if Dan Hooker is going to make it to that fight at this point. I think his visa issues are very public right now. Hopefully Monday, fingers crossed, he can get to Vegas by Thursday. It's going to be a rough fight week for that man. But would you throw Sarukian on the winner of Hooker and Haqparast, or would you go a different direction after that performance tonight?
If it's up to me, I like that. I like that fight. I think actually Armin, that was one thing I even forgot to mention when I was talking about Armin, is he sort of did the legwork early, right? Like he sort of planted those seeds coming into this fight. So he already had it set up to where Dan's like legitimately kind of upset at him and like actually wants to fight him, which like that's the biggest hurdle of all when you get to these really deep divisions, is convincing a ranked guy to give you the shot when you're not there, when you're sort of on that periphery of the division. So I would love that. I think Dan Hooker has had a really crazy slate of titles. top contender fights and just like really tough, tough fights against the best guys in the division. And he is sort of due for a very similar, like Anthony Smith-esque, hey, come back to the back of the line, work your way back up, fight a couple of these up and comers, and then we'll give you another top five guy. Like to me, if he beats Nasrat, even if he loses, like I would absolutely love to see that fight. And that feels like a proper escalation for Armin to me, while not really messing with sort of Dan's trajectory as well. I actually really like that.
Casey?
I hope it's a Hooker fight. I hope this is all the assumption Hooker gets in the country fine and makes weight fine, or yeah, whatever. That's all another thing. But I hope Zarukian bites a guy ahead of him. That's all. I think we're done with the building him up. I think this is the big highlight they needed, you know, to kind of.
Yeah, it's the last little push before he's going. He's running at this point.
Yeah, he needed to finish. He got it. And Jagos had three fight winning streak heading into the fight too. So
this next question might seem kind of crazy, but I don't know.
Is Jake Paul versus Yoel Romero a possible match should now be considering?
Both Showtime. Just saying.
AK, you're nodding.
Of course. Yeah. Hells yeah.
You put that on the poster and it sells itself. Oh my god, you put that Adonis, that 44-year-old Adonis, glisten him up. That's it. It's sold.
Imagine them facing off and you know, and Yoel just going,
oh god, go. The promos.
Go.
You give me like a table read where it's Ariel in the middle, yes, of just Yoel and Jake Paul, and Yoel's just grunting and like saying one word answers the entire time and staring him dead in the eyes, like I'm so in on that. That'll get 5 million YouTube views tomorrow.
I'm down.
Respect to Jake Paul takes that. Like Paul's not going to take that fight.
My only issue with the question is it shouldn't be considering. Is it the matchup that we should now be hoping for? Because then a resounding yes, this is what it should be next. No, I mean, look, there's a lot of good matchups for Jake Paul. Him and his team have done a really good job of picking their opponent so far. I do think Romero might be a little bit of a bridge too far, but I wouldn't like assume that Romero would like kill him. This is where we are with Paul experience now.
Jake could very well win that fight, right?
Like he could
versus that Cuban boxing. Who knows? I don't know. I just saw the question. I was like, that's just, oh, wait, hold on, let me think about this.
Let's put it out there. Yeah, let's put it out there in the universe. Let's be responsible for this when this happens. Yeah.
Possible opponent that could put the fear of God into Jake just in the pre-fight stuff, it's that man. Like all of us have been, I would imagine, at media days with Yoel Romero. That dude is the most intimidating human being to speak to ever. Like, it's just crazy. Like, we talk to professional cage fighters for a living, and I think I've never been as scared to talk to Yoel Romero. Like, he's such an intimidating dude in person.
I'm like, thank God this is a scrum, because I don't know if I can handle a one-on-one. You know,
yeah, like, I'll talk to Francis 100 times without feeling scared. And it's like...
The purist in me wants to see the Anderson fight. I want to see the Anderson-Jake Paul fight. That's the purist in me. But Sean, you sold me. Ariel in the middle, those two having like the table talk, right? And you all just staring a hole through him.
Just give him the crazy eyes the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Look, he knocks out Yoel, and then maybe, you know, Jorge Masvidal has to join in, you know, like, oh, you know, but for my fellow Cuban. Yeah, my fellow Cuban, you know.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think of the Masvidal. Like, Masvidal can't do the fight because of the UFC, but he can be the valet. You know, he can be right there, you know.
They'll be involved.
I mean, we could just go full circus and do a Masvidal Romero tag team. They switch every round. First round's Masvidal, second round's Romero. We're getting them both in the lead.
Against Jake and Logan, yeah. And against the Paul brothers.
Against both Pauls.
It books itself.
Yes, we should absolutely be considering that fight.
All right, a few more comments.
Hybrid Impact 83. Okay. If you think Phil Davis is boring, you don't know MMA. MMA is mixed for a reason. As Casey likes to say, it is the mixing of the martial arts. Yeah. And Phil Davis mixes those martial arts and does it very effectively. So, yes, Hybrid Impact 83. I'm with you.
I don't like to go as far as say, like, oh, if you don't appreciate a certain fighter, you don't know MMA. I always feel that's a little strong. But I would say you're maybe have somewhat myopic view of MMA. at least as far as what you find entertaining. And again, we all love Rock'em Sock'em stuff. We all love bizarre kind of freak show stuff. And we love it also when people are like are really able to dominate with their technical skills. Maybe that's what Phil Davis is missing sometimes. He's not like super dominant, but I thought he was pretty dominant tonight. Again, it was not a split decision.
No.
I thought the fight with Nemkov was really good, was really competitive. So I'm not sure what more you can ask from a guy like Phil Davis. He's not going to be doing, you know, Michel Pajeda, like jumping off the fence, Superman punches and stuff like that. It's just, he's not going to be doing like capoeira kicks. That's not what he does. That's not especially, he's a great wrestler who's become a great MMA fighter. And I don't know how that's not entertaining to people. Like, I'm not, again, he's not in fight of the year candidates or anything, but he is an enjoyable fighter to watch.
Come on. AK, you don't know how that's not entertaining? Like, it is very clear how it's not entertaining to some people. I'm fine. Like, I could watch Phil Davis fight and it's whatever, but like, I understand people who say that they're not fans of the way he approaches it. Like, it's very...
I think boring is too much. I think not a fan is one thing. I think saying he's boring is what gets me. I think I'm addressing this specific question. I do think if you say he's boring, I do think it's a bit.
And we do hear that a lot about. I don't watch stick and ball sports that much, but would you call Phil Davis like a Tim Duncan kind of like?
In a way, I think that's a good comparison. Yeah, I think that's a fair compare. I think obviously I'm a huge Tim Duncan fan. I think Tim Duncan's really entertaining, but there was a huge, if people remember the heyday of Tim Duncan, oh my Lord, a huge section of the fan base that's just like, Tim Duncan is boring. And I'm like, what? Like, so again, maybe I'm
not 100% wrong, but look, in that kind of area.
I'm a boring person. and GSP in his prime I always thought GSP was a really strong comparison to Tim Duncan because he also got the same crap during his championship run. I don't know if people are forgetting this because of, you know, his legacy now and he's one of the greatest of all time, but during his run, he got so much criticism for being boring. So I think that's a more than a fair comparison.
I mean, Tim Duncan is the greatest power forward of all time. It seems a little crazy to say that. But I understand GSP to me feels like the Tim Duncan of MMA, but I understand where you're coming from.
I'm sure there was other ones, but I stopped watching sports at a certain point and Tim Duncan is still my reference point.
Yeah. I would compare Phil Davis more to like a Kevin McHale or a Bill Walton.
We're really showing our age up there.
All
right.
We are. I'd put him more in that category.
Like a modern comparison, but
Bill Walton was flashy as hell. Bill Walton was doing all sorts of flash.
At times, just like Phil Davis. At times, when he needed to be.
Yeah, we're not. I see some of the comments. We're not saying it's the level of accomplishments. Of course not. But we're saying as far as how they're regarded by the public, like in a broad sense, I think that's makes sense.
Like, no one bought a ticket to go see Tim Duncan play basketball. You watch him.
A lot of people in San Antonio.
I forget it. I should have bought the ticket.
It's a big stadium too.
He was definitely a very, very popular player, but the on court product always got like from non San Antonio fans always got like this weird like flack for not being like the most thrilling thing, which is ridiculous because winning is always exciting, I think. But
okay, sorry, I meant to say who would win in a kickboxing match, Tim Duncan or Phil Davis?
Idris Elba. Idris Elba.
Remember Tim Duncan when he was doing those kickboxing? Yeah, how's he doing? All right, we've gone over an hour. You guys need to go to sleep. Right,
I think a lot of Phil Davis is too much.
Yeah, hold on, and here we go.
Yes.
Oh, the closing music. You know what that means? Sean's shaking his head, and that means we're going to do more work, everybody. Hopefully, you guys can get a good night rest after 26 or 27 fights, and we'll have more to discuss throughout the week on all of our various programs here on MMAfighting.com. Of course, Ariel Helwani back with the MMA Hour on Monday, 1 p.m., and I'm sure we'll be talking about that card, the UFC card, and much more. But until then, everybody, AK and I will see you tomorrow for On to the Next One. For AK, for Casey, for Sean, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Phil Davis would enjoy this music, I feel like. I think this is what Phil Davis would get.
This was his walkout song. You know?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations,
That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.